I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today we're talking about the musical theater of Gilbert and Sullivan with Robert Wyatt. But before we start the conversation, let's hear this tune from Pirates of Penzance, The Foreman Bears His Steel.
When the foreman bears his steel, tarantala, tarantala, we are comfortable feet, tarantala. Find the wisest thing, tarantara, tarantara, is to slap our chests and sing, tarantara. For when threatened with a mute, tarantara, tarantara, and your heart is in your boots, tarantara, there is nothing brings it down like the trumpet's martial sound, like the trumpet's martial sound, tarantara, tarantara. Such expressions don't appear, tarantara, tarantara, calculated meant to cheer, tarantara. Who are going to meet their fate in a highly nervous state, tarantara, tarantara, tarantara. Still to us it's evident these attentions are well meant, tarantara, tarantara, tarantara.
Oh, and do your best endeavor, and before all ends with ever,
stress on the risks that on us press, and of reference alack to our chance of coming back. Still, perhaps it would be wise not to carp or criticize, for it's very evident these attentions are well meant.
Yes, it's very evident these attentions are well meant. Evident, yes, well meant. Evident, ah, yes, well meant.
Lecturer, Steinway artist, and director of music at Highfield Hall. Pirates of Penzance, maybe one of the most well-known Gilbert and Sullivan musicals, right?
Yes, it is, and it was the only opera that was premiered in New York City. They found after HMS Pinafore that it was so popular, the producers and directors used to hop on the ocean liner in New York, go to Liverpool, buy the libretto, get the music, and go to the show at the Savoy Theater, and then they would bring it back to the United States. There were 150 pirated versions of HMS Pinafore. So they opened Pirates of Penzance in New York, and they didn't produce the libretto early.
Oh,
so
wow.
They made the money because, you know, U.S. wasn't giving them any copyrights.
Mm. All right, so tell us a little bit about Gilbert and Sullivan, this amazing duo, right? Which is so funny in that they were so influential and they didn't really like each other.
Yes, Gilbert was prickly and gruff, and Sullivan was cool and erudite. And they both thought that their contributions were weakened by the others. They were not friends, they rarely saw each other, and they created 14 of the most remarkable works of music despite their tempestuous relationship.
Yeah, that's really amazing when you think about it, and the influence that they had. These still perform today.
Yes, well, remember that Queen Victoria, at that time, ruled 25% of the population of the earth. So everybody heard Gilbert and Sullivan, and she loved their music.
Yeah. All right, so what are we going to hear next?
We're going to hear one of the 19 Patter songs that they wrote, and I picked It Doesn't Really Matter from Ruddy Gore because Vincent Price is the second male voice that you'll hear.
I love him.
My eyes are fully open to my awful situation. I shall go at once to Roderick and make him an ovation. I shall tell him I've recovered my forgotten moral senses and I don't give up and say pity for any consequences. Now I do not wish to perish by the sword or by the dagger, but a martyr may indulge a little pardon and a swagger and a word or two of compliment. My vanity would fatter, but I've got a tie tomorrow, so it really doesn't matter.
So it really doesn't matter, 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 matter. So it really doesn't matter, 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 matter.
So it really doesn't matter.
So it really doesn't matter. So it really doesn't
matter, 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 matter,
matter, matter, matter, matter, matter, matter, matter, matter, matter.
If I were not a little man and generally silly, I shall give you my advice upon the subject willy-nilly. I shall show you in a moment how to grapple with the question and to really be astonished at the force of my suggestion. The subject I shall write you a most valuable letter full of excellent suggestion when I feel a little better. But at present I'm afraid I'm as mad as any hatter, so I'll keep to myself for my opinion doesn't matter.
Her opinion doesn't matter, 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 matter. Her opinion doesn't matter, 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 matter.
My opinion doesn't matter.
Her opinion doesn't matter.
Her opinion doesn't matter, 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 matter.
If I had been so lucky as to have a steady brother who could talk to me as we are talking now to one another, who could give me good advice when he discovered I was erring, which is just the very favor which I knew I am conferring, my existence might have made a rather interesting idyll, and I might have lived and died a very decent individual. This particularly rapid, unintelligible patter isn't generally heard, and if it is, it doesn't matter.
If it is, it doesn't matter.
If it is, it doesn't matter, 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 matter. If it is, it doesn't matter.
This particularly rapid, unintelligible patter isn't generally heard, and if it is, it doesn't matter.
Makes you tired just listening.
Right? Well, breathe. All right. So, what are patter songs?
Well,
like, that was one, right?
Patter songs were actually in Greek music. We can hear patter songs, but it didn't really get popular until the 17th century and 18th, because even Mozart wrote patter songs, and Rossini and Donizetti, and they were so interesting because Gilbert would write these incredible lyrics and just toss them to Sullivan, and he would have to make sure that every syllable had a note to it. So if the tempo goes fast, the lyrics have to go very fast. It's amazing that they can do it.
Yeah, it is. Now, you mentioned that they didn't really like each other. How did they come to work together?
Well, they were invited to produce a one-act operetta as the lead-in to a Offenbach operetta. And it became so popular that they got the lead performance, and they went from Christmas until Easter with this trial by jury. And Thespis was not popular at all. So they, from the very first meeting, it took 4 years before they started writing good operetta.
Mm. All right. So next we're going to hear When I, Good Friends. Tell me this.
Yes.
Called to the Bar.
This is their first successful opera, and the man you're going to hear was played by Fred Sullivan, Arthur's brother.
Oh.
And he would have, you know, he was the person who really was the founder of the baritone patter song. And he died shortly afterwards, and Arthur Sullivan took care of his family for the rest of his life. But it's a really wonderful, the judge really has the best part in the entire show. So he's talking about how he became a judge, which he married a judge's daughter and then raised up to he got to the bar himself.
So this is from Trial by Jury.
Yes.
When I, good friends, was called to the bar, I had an appetite fresh and hearty, but I was, as many young barristers are, an impecunious party. I had a swallowtail coat of a beautiful blue, a brief which I bought off a booby, a couple of shirts and a collar or two, and a ring that looked like a ruby.
A couple of shirts and a collar or two, and a ring that looked like a ruby.
Westminster Hall, I danced a dance like a semi-despondent fury, for I thought I never should hit on a chance of addressing a British jury. I soon got tired of third-class journeys and dinners of bread and water. So I fell in love with Richard Downey's elderly, ugly daughter. The rich attorney, he jumped with joy and replied to me fond professions. You shall reap the reward if you pluck my boy at the bailey in Middlesex sessions. You'll soon get used to her looks, said he, and a very nice girl you'll find her. She may very well pass for 43 in the dust with the lights behind her. In the dust with the lights behind her. The rich attorney was good as his word. The briefs came trooping gaily, and every day my voice was heard at the sessions or Ancient Bailey. All thieves who could my fees afford relied on my orations. And many a burglar that I've restored to his friends and his relations. At length I became as rich as the Packers, an incubus then I thought her. So I threw over that rich attorney's elderly, ugly daughter. The rich attorney, my character high, tried vainly to disparage.
No!
Aye. And now, if you please, I'm ready to try this breach of promise of marriage. For now I'm a judge. I know I'm a judge. Though all my love.
This kind of, I guess, demonstrates this ability they had to address contemporary social and political issues and still keep it entertaining.
Yes, it's almost like you need a glossary just to understand what's going on, unless you happen to be a historian from Victorian times.
Yeah. All right, so tell us about Dolly Cart.
Dolly Cart. First met Gilbert and Sullivan when they did Trial by Jury. And he was an impresario who really was responsible for them making lots of money and becoming very famous. So he eventually built them a theater, the Savoy, where they could do all of their shows. And when they were producing a new show, they could play the old shows, you know, have a revival. And the Dolly Cart Opera Company was in existence for over 100 years. And one of their conductors from 1971 to 1979 was Royston Nash, the conductor of the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra for 26 years.
Yes, that's right. Wow. Wonderful. So next, we're gonna move right along here because we've got lots of music to hear in this hour. So this next piece is I Am the Monarch of the Sea.
Yes.
Right? So tell us a little bit about that before.
Well, HMS Pinafore was the first blockbuster and very popular today. And they were having so many pirated versions that they had to bring their Dolly Cart production to the United States to make any money at all. And towards the beginning of the opera, the captain introduces himself, and this is when we hear, I am the monarch of the seas.
I am the monarch of the sea, the ruler of the Queen's Navy, whose praise Great Britain will loudly chant.
And I am his sister,
I'm his cousin,
I'm his aunt.
And we are his sister and his cousin and his aunt,
his sister and his cousin and his aunt.
When at anchor here I ride, my bosom swells with pride, and I snap my fingers at foeman's taunt.
And so does his sister
and his cousin and his aunt.
And so does his sister and his cousin and his aunt.
His sister and his cousin and his aunt.
But when the breezes blow, I generally go below and seek the seclusion that a cabin may grant.
And so does his sister and his cousin and his aunt.
And so does his sister and his cousin and his aunt.
And so does his sister and his cousin and his aunt.
His sister and his cousin, where the ones have been his cousin and his aunt.
When
I was a lad, I served a term as an office boy to an attorney's firm. I cleaned the windows and I swept the floor, and I polished up the handle on the big front door.
He polished up the handle on the big front door.
I polished up the handle so carefully that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
He polished up the handle so carefully that now he is the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
As office boy, I made such a mark that they gave me the post of a junior clerk. I served the writs with a smile so bland and copied all the letters in a big round hand.
He copied all the letters in a big round hand.
I copied all the letters in a hand so free that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
He copied all the letters in a hand so free that now he is the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
In serving writs, I made such a name that an articled clerk I soon became. I wore clean collars and a brand new suit for the pass examination at the Institute.
For the pass examination at the Institute.
That pass examination did so well for me that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
That pass examination did so well for me that now he is the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
Of legal knowledge, I acquired such a grip that they took me into the partnership. The junior partnership, I ween, was the only ship that I ever had seen.
Was the only ship that I ever had seen.
But that kind of ship so suited me that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
But that kind of ship so suited me that now he is the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
I grew so rich that I was sent by a pocket borough into Parliament. I always voted in my party's call. I never thought of thinking for myself at all.
He never thought of thinking for himself at all.
I thought so little they rewarded me by making me the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
He thought so little they rewarded me by making you the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
I learned some tricks from the Ipswich witch. If you want to win a vote, scratch a bigot's itch. Said the Oxley moron, let's breed bunyips. They say her face had launched 1,000 fish and chips.
They say her face had launched 1,000 fish and chips.
One-eyed like Nelson, that's the trick, you see. That's why I'm still the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
One-eyed like Nelson, that's the trick, you see. That's why he's the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
Now, landsmen all, whoever you may be, if you want to rise to the top of the tree, your soul isn't fettered to an office stool. Be careful to be guided by this golden rule.
Be careful to be guided by this golden rule.
Stick close to your desks and never go to sea. And you all may be rulers of the Queen's Navy.
Stick close to your desks and never go to sea. And you all may be rulers of the Queen's Navy.
We are talking about the lives and music of Gilbert and Sullivan, and we'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the lives and music of Gilbert and Sullivan with Robert Wyatt, Smithsonian lecturer, Steinway artist, and director of music at Highfield Hall. We were talking about the influence they had on musical theater and how many other composers really admired them. I mean, the list is, you know, like George Gershwin, Jerome Kern, Andrew Lloyd Webber, and Noel Coward wrote, this isn't from the introduction in his songbook, "I was born into a generation that still took light music seriously. The lyrics and melodies of Gilbert and Sullivan were hummed and strummed into my consciousness at an early age. My father sang them, my mother played them, my nurse Emma breathed them through her teeth while she was washing me, dressing me and undressing me and putting me to bed. My aunts and uncles, who were legions, sang them singly and in unison at the slightest provocation."
That reminds me of a story that when Richard Rodgers, as a 17-year-old boy, went to see Lorenz Hart for the very first time, what they did was they sat around, they listened to Jerome Kern, and they listened to Gilbert and Sullivan. Mm. Larry Hart thought that Gilbert and Sullivan's the very top.
Yeah. All right, so we're sticking with HMS Pinafore.
Yes.
Right? What's the next thing we're going to hear?
Well, we're going to hear Never Mind the Why and Wherefore. The very interesting part about this, I believe, is that William Gilbert's father was a naval surgeon before he became a writer. So there's lots of stories about Navy. And he wrote this in one of his Babs ballads. His nickname was Babs. So he wrote the stories, and then he would draw the stories into the operas. And this particular attack of the British social system comes in the second act when Josephine, her father, the captain, and Sir Joseph, her lover, to be, but not. They learn that love lowers all ranks. So then Josephine will hesitate no longer to marry her able but lower class seaman, Rafe.
Never mind the why and wherefore, love can level ranks, and therefore, though his lordship's station mighty, though stupendous be his blame, though her tastes are mean and flighty, and her fortune poor and lame. In clarion bells of lordship, and there with warbling plan, for the union of his lordship with a humble captain's child, for a humble captain's daughter,
for a captain's daughter,
and a lord who rules the water,
and a tart rules the water.
Yes, there with joy we lay to bring the songs the air above, for the union of a maiden with a man who wants her love.
Never mind the why and wherefore, love can level ranks, and therefore, though your nautical relation in my set could scarcely pass, though you occupy a station in the lower middle class.
Sit still. It's hard to sit still, right?
It is.
You know, speaking of HMS Pinafore, according to theater historian John Kenrick, he says this in particular was an international sensation, but he says it reshaped the commercial theater in both England and the United States.
Absolutely. And actually all over the world, because mm-hmm. since they ruled 25% of the population of the country, Gilbert and Sullivan was in everybody's head.
Yeah. All right. So we're moving on now to Pirates of the Penzance, right?
Yes. This is Poor Wandering One, one of the most famous of the arias of Gilbert and Sullivan. And it's going to be sung by Marilyn Hill Smith, who's one of the stars of the Doyle Cart, was one of the stars of the Doyle Cart Opera Company.
Help me find through peace of mind. Why take it?
right. So do you think Sullivan was influenced by his father with that one?
Absolutely. Yep. His father was a bandmaster. So Sullivan was born and lived in a band society. So any march, any waltz, anything like that, he is the master. And he was beautifully classically trained. He even studied in Germany for a long time. So when he writes music, he also orchestrated them. So he did the entire package. What a brilliant, brilliant man.
Right. Now, before the creation of the Savoy operas, amateur actors were treated with contempt by the professionals.
Yes.
And Gilbert and Sullivan had a big influence on that and their troops, because that's what they hired, were amateurs, right?
They hired amateurs and they became stars because they knew exactly what Gilbert wanted, which was that the topsy-turvy, these plots where completely absurd things happen and they work them out logically and they remain absurd. So after a while, you sit there and thinking, oh, this makes a lot of sense, but it was just crazy.
Yeah. So the professionals came to recognize that this was a great training ground, so to speak, for the legitimate stage, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there are amateur organizations all over the world, more than 80 in this country alone. So everybody wants to rent a Gilbert and Sullivan score. They want to get the costumes and put on productions that seem professional, although still amateur.
Mm. All right, so what are we going to hear next?
We're going to hear I Am the Very Model of a Modern Major General. I Am the Very Model of a Modern Major General.
Say that three times fast.
It's even tough to say. This is one of the most famous songs in all of their operas. It's the introduction of General Stanley in Act One. It's one of the most difficult patter songs because of the fast pace and the twisting tongue lyrics. It's sung by George Rose in the 1983 film with Kevin Klein, Angela Lansbury, and Linda Ronstadt, the movie that lost lots of money.
I am the very model of a modern major general. Life, information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the Pisces article from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I'm very well acquainted, too, with matters mathematical. I understand equations both as simple and quadratical. About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news. Ooh, lot of news, lot of news. Got it. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. I'm very good at integral and differential calculus. I know the scientific names of beings and animalculus. In short, it matters vegetable, animal, and mineral. I am the very model of a modern major general. I know I'm epic history, King Arthur's answer paradox. I answer hard acrostics, I've a pretty tasteful paradox. I quote in elegiacs all the kinds of heliogabalus. In colleagues, I control the curiabitus analysis. I can tell an Alfred Raphael, or some Gerard Dalsosophanes. I know the croaking calls from the frogs of Aristophanes. Then I can hum a fugue of Bridgetto, the Muric dinner four. Ooh, dinner four, dinner four. Got it. And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore. In Babylonic uniform and tell you every detail of Caractacus' uniform. It's only that is vegetable, animal, and mineral. I am the very model of a modern major general. In fact, when I know what is meant by Mamelon and Ravelin, when I can tell at sight a mouse, a rifle from a javelin, when such affairs as sorties and surprises I'm more wary at, and when I know precisely what is meant by commissariat, when I have learned what progress has been made in modern gallery, when I know more of tactics than a novice in a nunnery, in short, when I've a smattering of elemental strategy. Ooh, Ash, that's a hard one, a strategy. Got it. You'll see a better Major General has never strategy. And adventure has only been brought down to the beginning of the century, but still in matters better, double animal and mineral. I am the very model of a modern major general.
It's interesting how many lines from their, you know, parodies that have come out of some of the phrases in the music, and some that, you know, we let the punishment fit the crimes, things that we still use today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even topsy-turvy is something we use today.
Yeah, that's right, topsy-turvy. All right, so tell us what we're moving into a new...
We're moving to Patience, and Patience is hardly ever performed today because it's so outdated. But it was the second most popular operetta to the Mikado. So it was heard a lot during its day, and then we hardly hear it ever again. It's all about aestheticism and the craze that was going on with Oscar Wilde and James Whistler and the Stanislav. And what we're going to hear is the duet from Act Two between Patience's true love, Grosvenor, and his rival, Bunthorne, who hopes that lovesick maidens will follow him as before. When go out of doors, one of the most remarkable patter songs.
When I go out of door, of damosels a score, all sighing and burning and clinging and yearning will follow me as before. I shall with cultured taste distinguish gems from paste, and high diddle diddle will rackers on idle if I pronounce it chaste. A most intense young man, a soulful eyed young man, an utter poetical, super aesthetical, out of the way young man. Conceive me if you can, an everyday young man, a commonplace type with a stick and a pipe and a half with black and tan. Thinks suburban hops more fun than Monday pops, who's fond of his dinner and doesn't get thinner on bottled beer and chops. A commonplace young man, a matter-of-fact young man, a steady and solid jolly bank holiday everyday young man. A Japanese young man, a blue and white young man, Francesca Rimini, Mimini, Pimini, je ne sais quoi young man. A Chancery Lane young man, a Somerset House young man, a very delectable, highly respectable, threepenny bus young man. A pallid and thin young man, a haggard and lank young man, a greenery, yallery, grove and a gallery, foot in the grave young man. A sewell and cross young man, a howling James young man, a pushing a particle, what's an exotic, a Waterloo House young man. Conceive me if you can, a matter of fact young man, an alphabetical lad, aesthetical everyday young man. Conceive me if you can, a matter of fact young man, an alphabetical arithmetical everyday young man.
We're discussing the music and lives of Gilbert and Sullivan. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about the music and lives of Gilbert and Sullivan with Robert Wyatt, Smithsonian lecturer, Steinway artist, and director of music at Highfield Hall. And one of the things we've been talking about, you know, how they've been parodied, they've influenced theater and music and television, all kinds of things. Even legal cases have quoted Gilbert and Sullivan, and I thought this was really interesting. U.S. Supreme Court Justice William Rehnquist, a lifelong fan of Gilbert and Sullivan, quoted lyrics from the operas in law cases. He also parodied the lyrics in his writings at the court and added gold stripes to his judicial robes after seeing them being used by the Lord Chancellor, which is the play or the opera we're moving to now.
Yes. Iolanthe. This happens to be my favorite Gilbert and Sullivan operetta. Who can actually resist fairies cavorting with members of the House of Peers? And Iolanthe, the fairy who committed the capital crime of marrying a mortal human, must promote her son, who is a fairy above the waist and a mortal below the waist. Tripping hither, tripping thither, the fairies proceed onto stage.
Bring the stars and we must see.
Right, so we mentioned that Gilbert and Sullivan didn't really like each other, even though they managed to produce this amazing work as a team. They actually had a bit of a falling out.
Yeah, when it finally got to what is really the last good Gilbert and Sullivan opera, which is The Gondoliers, Gilbert realized that D'Oyly-Carte might be swindling them. So he basically, and he was, and so he sued Gilbert sued D'Oyly-Carte, and Sullivan had to side with D'Oyly-Carte because D'Oyly-Carte was building him an opera house for his grand opera. So that was pretty much the end, but then they had a 5-show contract. So 4 years later, they did number 4 and 5, and then they were done.
That was it, done. All right, we're going to move now on to the most popular opera, the Mikado.
Yes, Mikado. One of the most popular operas of all time.
Yeah. All right, tell us about what we're going to hear.
We're going to hear The Sun Whose Rays Are Ablaze. And the story of Nanki Poo, the Mikado's son, comes to the town to marry Yum Yum, but she is going to be betrothed to the Lord High Executioner. So he allows them to marry, and then he will, 1 month later, be executed. So you're going to hear Yum Yum singing what's known as the Moon Song, which is one of the most beautiful arias ever written and really rivals anything written by Puccini or Verdi, who were contemporaries.
The sun whose rays are all ablaze with ever-living glory does not deny his majesty, he scorns to tell us. Don't exclaim, I blush for shame, so kindly be indulgent. But fierce and bold in fiery gold, he glories all effulgent. I mean to rule the earth as he the sky.
This was pretty much an immediate hit. It premiered at the Savoy Theatre in London March 14th, 1885, and its initial production ran for 672 performances, and within a year, 150 other companies were performing. It just took off and never stopped.
Like Andrew Lloyd Webber of their day.
Yeah, of their day, yeah. So we're going to hear one more from the Mikado.
Yes. Towards the end of Act 2, Yum Yum learns that the wedding plans are going to be disrupted when she understands that if her husband is beheaded, then she has to be buried alive along with him. So things changed just a bit. This is my favorite trio of all, Gilbert and Sullivan.
Here's how they do. If I marry you, when your time has come to perish, then the maiden whom you cherish must be slaughtered too. Here's how they do. Here's how they do.
Here's a pretty mess. In a month or less, I must die without a wedding. Let the bitter tears I'm shedding witness my distress. Here's a pretty mess. Here's a pretty mess.
Here's a state of things. To her life she clings. Matrimonial devotion doesn't seem to suit her notion. Burial it brings. Here's a state of things. Here's a state of things.
With a passion that's intense, I worship and adore. But the laws of common sense we often do ignore. If what they say is true, 'tis death to marry you. Here's a pretty state of things. Here's a pretty howdy-do. Here's a pretty state of things. A pretty state of things.
Here's a howdy-do.
For if what he says is true, I cannot marry you. Here's a pretty, pretty state of things.
Here's a pretty howdy-do.
This kind of speaks to that topsy-turvy plot you were talking about, huh?
Yeah. Well, they diminished the topsy-turvy and the satire when it got to Yeoman of the Guard, and they wrote the closest to a grand opera ever. And the only show that they wrote that was depressing and had an ending where they didn't live happily ever after. The two couples were iffy, and the lead of the show was downright depressed because he didn't get what he wanted. And Gilbert, this is the very first time that Sullivan ever asked Gilbert if he had written a tune for this particular song. And Gilbert says, I only know two tunes. One is God Save the Queen, and one isn't. But you're going to hear a happier moment of Act One where they sing, I Have a Song to Sing, Oh.
We should mention that you will be giving a lecture about Gilbert and Sullivan this Saturday, November 4th at Highfield Hall in Falmouth. And we'll have details at our website, capeandislands.org. We're going to go out on this I Have a Song to Sing. And thank you so much for coming in and sharing your knowledge of Gilbert and Sullivan with us.
You're welcome, Mindy. It was my pleasure.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
I have a song to sing, oh.
Sing me your song, oh.
It is sung to the moon by a lovelorn loon who fled from the mocking throng. Oh, it's a song of a merry man moping mum whose soul was sad and whose glance was glum, who sipped no sup and who craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady. Heidi, Heidi, misery me, lackadady, he sipped no sup and he craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
I have a song to sing, oh.
What is your song, oh?
It is sung with the ring of the songs made sing that love with a love lifelong. Oh, it's a song of a merry maid, peely proud, who loved a lord and who laughed aloud at the moan of the merry man moping mum, whose soul was sad and whose glance was glum, who sipped no sup and who craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady. Heady, heady, misery me, lackadady, he sipped no sup and he craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
I have a song to sing, oh.
Sing me your song, oh.
It It is sung to the knell of a churchyard bell and a doleful dirge ding-dong. Oh, it's a song of a popinjay bravely born who turned up his noble nose with scorn at the humble merry-maid Peely Prout, who laughed aloud and who laughed aloud at the moan of the merry man moping mum, whose soul was sad and whose glance was glum, who sipped no sup and who craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady. Lady, lady, misery me, lackadady, he sipped no sup and he craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
I have a song to sing, oh.
Sing me your song, oh.
It is sung with a sigh and a tear in the eye, for it tells of a right and a wrong. Oh, it's a song of a merry maid once so gay, who turned on a heel and tripped away from the peacock popinjay bravely born, who turned up his noble nose in scorn at the humble heart that he did not prize. So she begged on her knees with downcast eyes for the love of a merry man moping mum, whose soul was sad and whose glance was glum, who sipped no sup and who craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
Lady, lady, misery me, lackadady, his pains were o'er and he sighed no more, for he lived in the love of a lady. Lady, lady, misery me, lackadady, his pains were o'er and he sighed no more, for he lived in the love of a lady.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.